Ritter complete over the middle. That's Wiley. Still in the open field and still on his feet. Wiley, Houdini, touchdown Cincinnati. Oh, he hit him with some sauce.
This is the High Motor Podcast, the Thursday episode of the High Motor Podcast. Andrew Dowdy and Chase Kitty here ahead of week 13 in college football. We are talking here literally right after the first playoff ranking. So we're talking here on Tuesday night, maybe 15, 20 minutes after the first playoff rankings come out. We're not going to get into too much of the actual playoff rankings, but there are some betting things I want to touch on, and we're going to jump right into it. We're going to talk some headliner games. We're going to get to Chase's best bets in a bit, but first, I want to get your take on something, because we are sitting here 20, 25 minutes after the playoff rankings come out. Historically, right after those first rankings are revealed, and yes, with the disclaimer that this is just different, we have one fewer sets of rankings this year. Typically, we're getting these almost a month ago. We're sitting here talking, what is it, November 24th, getting the first playoff rankings when some teams have played two games, some teams have played eight or nine games. So I get all that part of it. But historically, right after those first playoff rankings come out, do you notice any, I don't even want to say trends, but do you notice anything different that happens with lines that wouldn't normally happen on a Tuesday night or even a Wednesday morning? Maybe some bettors who are reacting to the first rankings making different betting decisions than they would have had the rankings been a little bit different. It's just different for them. We talk about so much of perception, not only in the realm of betting, but with the AP poll, how important that is, even though people want to scream and say it's meaningless because voters don't actually watch all that games. I agree with that, but it still matters for the perception of college football. Do you think actually seeing that certain number next to a team's name, actually seeing the 7 next to Cincinnati this weekend, is there anything there with this question that I'm kind of leading towards? Or the first rankings don't move lines that much, don't change your approach really at all?
It's a really interesting question. So I'm going to give you, I think, what is a classic infuriating Chase yes and no answer. So who generally moves lines? We're talking about professional bettors, right? We're talking about big fish. And pros really don't care about what the playoff rankings are. If they want to bet on a team or against a team, they're going to do it. They're going to do it regardless of what the playoff ranking is. And they're probably doing it before Tuesday night anyway. So in that respect, it's pretty irrelevant. What I would be more interested on is smaller volume-based, ticket volume-based movement later in the week, when you start to see the public come in on certain teams that they might not otherwise. So for example, Tulsa comes in at 25 in the playoff rankings. I don't know off the top of my head who Tulsa's playing this week. I think I have it written down in my notes somewhere, but they're playing, whoever they're playing, I would be curious to compare the ticket count for this upcoming game on Tulsa versus a couple weeks ago, say when they were playing SMU as a home favorite. I think that could be an interesting vibe. I think there could be something there. And given that lots of people, including myself, like to bet against the public, that's something we look for, not as an active reason to bet something, but maybe as some sort of confirmation, like, oh, I think this is the right side. Ooh, and the public's on the other side, so I feel extra good about it. I think that could be an interesting thing to chase. I would be interested to look back maybe at the last 5 years or so and look at teams that enter the playoff rankings in that 20 to 25 zone and then look at their ATS performance immediately after those rankings come out that following week. That could be an interesting angle to chase down.
Looking at Tulsa, they're at Houston this week. It's at minus 2 Houston. I know you said you didn't know who they were playing, but
right.
I assume
it's in my notes. Yeah.
I wonder if it's in your best bets, but I don't. So we will get to that part, but I totally forgot a comment that you made. We were talking about Northwestern on Monday's episode, and I think you said, no matter what the line is for Northwestern, I am betting against them this week. And I had completely forgot about this when I sent you a few games that I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about that right now because it came to my mind. Northwestern is 13.5 at Michigan State. do you really not care what that line would have been if it was 16, 17, 18 and a half? You still would have, or excuse me, if it would have been lower, Northwestern 4, 5, 6, whatever, you would have taken Michigan State no matter what?
I mean, of course, there are limits on statements like that. I don't know what the points were. Okay, so of course all that. But when I got on and I started doing research for this week's gambling podcast, I see Northwestern opens at minus 10 and a half in East Lansing. I love to bet. In general, I like betting on favorites at 10 and a half because I feel that's just something I look at. That's a me specific thing. But in this case, I was looking to bet against them. You know, when you're getting the hook in a Big Ten game like this, where scoring could be at a premium, that could matter. And then the spread gets bet up from 10 and a half to 13 and a half. So I like to bet spreads as a counterplay when there's at least 3 points worth of line movement. So there were so many boxes checked in this game for Michigan State when I really started to look at it. When you're talking about counterplays, selling high on a team like Northwestern, home dog, the 3 points, there's just a lot there.
Stupidly low total in that game too, 42.5. I'm going through here. We're using BetMGM lines, by the way. And again, we're talking here on Tuesday night, so depending on when you listen to this episode, dropping on Thursday, might be just a little bit different. But yeah, I think 42.5 is
might
the
be able
lowest
to get it at
total.
14. I mean, it, based on when this podcast drops, it might be north of 14 at that point. I want to run this by you. I'm watching just a few minutes ago. I'm watching the college football thing. I'm watching the playoff show, and I'm watching them unveil the top 10. Ohio State comes in at number 4, which we kind of talked about in the last episode, how I thought it might be 1 Alabama, 2 Notre Dame, 3 Clemson, 4 Ohio State. Fine, whatever. Cincinnati's at number 7. Am I crazy? I'm going to double down on the Ohio State, anti-Ohio State rhetoric here. I think Cincinnati should be ranked higher than Ohio State. So I'm going to give you a brief argument on why that is, but I'm going to let you react just to that statement first. Cincinnati should be ranked higher than Ohio State. What do you think?
No, not even
Fine.
Close.
Could you give me a 1-2 sentence encapsulation of why you think they should not be?
I was just going back and forth with Braden Gall of Athlon, and I don't think he would really characterize it as a back and forth. He seemed pretty upset with me about my take on Georgia being number 9 over BYU. And I'm not even necessarily like, it's hard to explain. I'm not even necessarily saying that like Georgia shouldn't be ahead of them, ahead of BYU. What I'm saying is like, what has Georgia done to suggest they're the 9th best team in college football? They might be that, but I'm a big resume guy, and within that resume, and I don't know exactly what the committee drills down to because they just don't tell us anything, but I'm a big, what is the best thing you have done? So in the Georgia-BYU argument, BYU went to Boise and just blew the doors off of Boise. Georgia beat Auburn. Georgia beat Arkansas. Georgia beat Tennessee. There's just nothing there that I think really compares to going to Boise and just blowing the doors off of it. Going to Cincinnati and Ohio State, what does Cincinnati have? Do we agree that their best win is probably that 30-point or whatever it was, 42-13 win against SMU? So far, we think that's their best win, probably.
No, we do not agree on that.
Where are you at? UCF? Army? What are you at?
I think it's probably UCF, and okay. I have some stats to back that up. But let me back up just a little bit.
Sure.
The idea that a lot of Cincinnati people would probably make the argument of, well, look at our numbers and look at our record and all that stuff, right? The, hey, we're 7-0. Hey, we've got good metrics. Look at our total defense. Cincinnati, number 9, Ohio State, number 33. Look at our scoring defense. Cincinnati, 3, Ohio State, 31. Yada, 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 all that. And Ohio State can say, hey, that's cool, but who have you played? Because we play in the Big Ten and you don't play in a Power 5 conference. You're with me so far, right?
Yep.
So I went and looked at the best 4 games both of these teams have played so far. Because if Ohio State guy wants to argue, look at our schedule, look at our wins, they're more impressive, they should have the better wins. It's like that's pretty linear. So going through FPI, which is a flawed way to do this, but there's no perfect way to do this. You look at Cincinnati's opponents, UCF, they rank 17th in FPI. Houston, 50, SMU, 57, Memphis, 67. Again, this is not perfect. I would probably rank SMU and Memphis higher than they are in FPI, but whatever. Let's look at Ohio State's opponents. Indiana, 18. Penn State, 31. That's a joke, but they're at 31. Nebraska, 61. Rutgers, 74. And I think Rutgers is criminally underrated there at 74. But again, there's some catch-up that the FPI system hasn't done yet with Rutgers and Penn State, so it all kind of evens out in the wash. What's my point here? Even when you get to the part of the argument that Ohio State fans want to have, look at our wins, they're better than your wins. Cincinnati has a better top win, according to FPI. And when you average it all out, Cincinnati's average is higher. 17, 50, 57, 67. That's their four best wins. Ohio State's four wins. 18, 31, 61, 74. And again, you're giving Penn State way too much credit at 31. But even when you give it to them, Cincinnati still has the better resume there. So why is Ohio State higher than Cincinnati? There is no argument that makes sense to me.
Getting back to my point, and I'm fine with your argument. Like, I don't, if you want to, there, that's why this playoff debate is so complicated, and that's why nobody can ever agree on that, even though I think that the committee has nailed the four teams in order throughout the first 6 years of the playoff, and we'll see where we land this year, but I think they've done a good job generally. But this is not an easy thing to talk about because, again, we don't know exactly what the committee is looking at, and even if they have 10 different metrics, there is no easy way to weigh those individually. They're not like they're putting like the old BCS. They're not putting 10% on this metric, 10% on this metric, and just adding it all up. It's not math for them. There is an eye test component, hence the ambiguity. I go back to my point. Cincinnati's best win, if you want to take UCF, fine. If you want to take SMU, even if they beat Tulsa, which I think maybe could be their best win here in a few weeks, none of those sniff Ohio State beating Indiana. And I get that Ohio State did not look that good, but I am still taking Ohio State's win over Indiana much, much greater than what Cincinnati has done in any of those games. And that's a huge component for me. What is the best thing that you have done? It's not everything, but that carries a lot of weight for me. And that's enough weight for me to comfortably put them ahead of Cincinnati in this.
And by the way, my argument isn't Cincinnati should be in the playoff. My argument is Cincinnati should be ranked higher than Ohio State because every possible argument that I could listen to, I think, especially if Indiana loses again, you're going to get into some really interesting places with this back and forth. And I don't think this will ever happen. I'm just looking at all the logical through lines, and I really think Cincinnati should be higher than Ohio State.
Before we get in, I want to talk about three games and then your best bets, but I want to maybe set aside a conversation for the future about like what you said if Indiana suffers another loss. For example, going back to the Ohio State-Penn State game 3 or 4 weeks ago that looked like a decent win for Ohio State. Like, they didn't look that great in that game, but they still, you know, won the game comfortably. At that time, it looked like a pretty solid win for Penn State. Obviously, when Indiana beat Penn State, that looked like a really good win, and now we've seen what Penn State has done. I want to have a deeper conversation on the perception of what that those early season wins do, because those are driven by where those teams are ranked in preseason polls. We all thought Penn State was going to be really, really good this year. Therefore, when Indiana beat them, when Ohio State beat them, we gave those teams credit. Now, everybody else that beats them, we get no credit. And even though we kind of retroactively go back and say, well, yeah, I mean, Indiana beat Penn State, but turns out Penn State sucks, I don't think we can completely wipe that from our memory. So I want to table that conversation for the future, because I think that's an interesting thing to break down, how much credit we should be giving, especially this year. You brought up something to maybe talk about today, but we're probably going to have to table that too. At what point are teams, and this is a really hard game to play, at what point are teams just not giving 100%? We don't know because we're not in the locker room, but it's pretty darn safe to say that there are teams in a normal year that aren't giving 100% at the end of the year, especially this year. Are teams quitting because they don't want to go out and play these games in front of empty stadiums? Are they having COVID issues? We don't know, but I want to bring back those two things maybe later in the season. As we get closer to the playoff, three games here for you we're going to go through, and then Chase will rattle through some best bets. The first one I want to talk about, Notre Dame at North Carolina. Notre Dame was number two in the playoff rankings. I expected them to be there or number three. North Carolina came in at, what, number 19. The line there is Notre Dame 5.5. Does this game interest you at all?
Yeah, kind of. And a lot of times I think we get into these high-profile games and my position is kind of, I don't know, I'm probably going to stay away from this. I think North Carolina is getting a lot of respect here. And as I have detailed multiple times, I'm trying to check myself with my obvious season-long why is North Carolina being talked about like they're some top 10 team and they're just not. So I'm trying to take that out of this as much as possible. But I can't to some degree because that's pivotal to my handicap here. North Carolina is, even if you want to factor in some sort of negligible home field advantage, they're not within a touchdown of Notre Dame, the way Notre Dame has been playing the last month to month and a half of the season. And this is by far the best team that North Carolina will have played. So the idea that they are a, you know, hovering between 4 and 5 point home underdog to a Notre Dame team that has been really laying the smackdown on people, I just don't really understand what's up with that line. And I've seen some pros that are on the North Carolina side of this. So it's not like it's just the public that's hyping up North Carolina here. There is some real pro movement toward the dog side of this. I would be looking at Notre Dame to play as not just to win, but to cover. I might even be looking at an alternate line here and maybe taking Notre Dame at like a -9.5 with some, you know, plus rated odds. Because I just don't think that North Carolina is going to be able to keep this game within a touchdown. I think when you look at the style of play that Notre Dame has, it's going to be, we're going to run the ball down your throat and we're going to hit play action with Ian Book. And you are not going to win the time of possession game. You're not even going to come close to it when you're playing us. So this is like this could be like a 37-23 type of game. Talking about time of possession, not the score. So I think Notre Dame is the side to be on here. And then when you start looking at the total, it's jumped from 64 to 67. For that same reason, I would think about the under here. And North Carolina unders, you are really playing with fire if you want to try to take an under in a Tar Heels game. But I do think that that's probably the side to be on, not just because of the counter potential with the line movement, but because of the ball control strategy that I think Brian Kelly is going to opt for here in Chapel Hill. I would be looking at the Notre Dame to play as a favorite and the under as well, and potentially a parlay between the two of them.
Let's talk about the Iron Bowl. That's the premier CBS game, 3:30. Auburn at Alabama. Alabama came in at number 1 in the playoff rankings. No surprise there. Auburn came in at number 22 at 5-2 in the playoff rankings. Alabama right now, again on BetMGM, a 24-point favorite. You had mentioned this line moved a little bit. Is that too high for you or is it not high enough?
Yeah, so I actually mentioned on our Monday episode, kind of looking ahead, that I might like Auburn in this spot. So the look-ahead line when we were recording on Sunday was Auburn plus 21. That gets raised on the opening line to 23.5. It crosses 24, which is a key number of sorts, I guess you could say, up to 24.5 and has been kind of floating in that neighborhood. So if I liked Auburn at 21, I obviously am going to like him at 24.5. I think this is a great spot to bet Auburn. I think they have gotten their like weird early season bullshit out of the way where everybody starts to go, hey, is this the year we're going to get rid of Malzahn? They always play Alabama close. And maybe I shouldn't say always, but it's the Iron Bowl. It's rarely a blowout. Mm-hmm. Stat I've got here on the handicap. Since Saban took over at Alabama, Auburn and Alabama have played 7 games in which both of them were ranked in the top 25. Only once was Auburn the higher ranked team. That's 2010 with the Cam Newton team. Every other time, so the other 6 of the 7 games, Alabama has been the higher ranked team. Despite that, Auburn is 4-3 straight up in those games. So they've won 4 of the 7 outright. I don't have to tell you that anytime you can get 24.5 points in a contest of 2 ranked teams in this matchup, I think plus the points is the right side to be on. I think when you add in the fact that Alabama is not close to what they usually are defensively this year, Auburn is going to be able to score points and keep it close. I'm not telling you Auburn wins this one, but I do think they cover the big number.
Yeah, I was going through some of the history of the Iron Bowl right before we hopped on here, because I know we were going to talk about it, and we all know that Auburn's been one of the few teams that consistently beat Saban. They have four wins since 2010. Like you mentioned, that was the 28-27 Cam Newton year. They do have four wins, so they're, what, 4-6 against Alabama over that time. I think that's probably the best record of any team that's played 10 games against a Saban team over the last decade. A lot of those games extremely close. We know that last year's game in Auburn, that put an interesting wrinkle in the playoff debate and helped clear things up a little bit, officially eliminated Alabama from contention. Let's move to the Big 12 before we get to your best bets. Oklahoma is going to Morgan. That's in Morgantown, right?
It is in Morgantown, baby.
Oklahoma at West Virginia. That is the primetime ABC game, 7:30 Eastern. Oklahoma right now, 10.5-point favorite over your Mountaineers. What are you thinking here?
Andrew Dowdy, do you know the last year that my West Virginia Mountaineers beat Oklahoma?
2013?
West Virginia has not beaten Oklahoma since they joined the Big 12. Last time they beat Oklahoma was the crazy-ass 2007 year where West Virginia should have gone to the national championship. They lose in the game, which we will not speak of. They play Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. They win 48-28. Join the Big 12. Haven't beat them since. So, there is some, and I think I've been at every game in Morgantown. I won't be at the one this year.
Hold on. I didn't know this. So I pulled up the series history.
Oh, yeah. It's brutal. It was 2-2 coming into the conference, and they're 0-8 since then.
I'm not even talking about that. But the last time that West Virginia held Oklahoma under 44 points.
Oh, yeah, it's bad. So I've got more notes here. 0-8 versus Oklahoma since joining the Big 12. Five have been losses of 10 or more points. Four of the last five have been losses of 20 or more points.
In the last four games, Oklahoma has averaged.
Just dumped.
Averaged 56 points.
Yeah, so this is not what you might call a competitive game, a competitive series. But I'm taking the Mountaineers. Okay, so let me tell you why. I think, and I could, look, I can speak pretty intelligently on West Virginia. I watch a lot of West Virginia football, as people that listen to this podcast know. The reason, I mean, there's multiple reasons why Oklahoma has dominated West Virginia. But one of the big reasons is that West Virginia has historically played this funky 3-3-5 stack defense. And there's a lot of advantages to playing it, but one of the disadvantages is, if you're playing a team with a big, physical, talented offensive line, and you have three down linemen at the line of scrimmage, especially if you have a shitty nose tackle like we've had many of the last few years, with, you know, all due respect to the young men that have played nose tackle for the Mountaineers, we have not had a ton of great ones in the last decade. You're going to get run over. And that's what Oklahoma does to West Virginia time in and time out. That's why they score 60 points a game or whatever it is. They just run the ball down the West Virginia's throats. West Virginia has moved to more of a 4-2-5. It's a complicated defense. They really don't even have a defensive coordinator this year. That's a whole other story. But I really think that schematic changes and the momentum that West Virginia is playing with right now, they haven't lost in Morgantown yet this year. I'm not saying they win this game. I definitely think they can. I kind of think they might. I don't want to get too punch drunk here. I do think this is going to be a much more competitive game than we've seen most of the last few years. I don't think it's going to be all that high scoring like it has been. I think the total's like 55, so that kind of tells you all you need to know. I think they cover, and I really do think Oklahoma could be on upset alert here. They were off last week, West Virginia was. They really want to win this game. I have talked to some players. I have talked to some coaches. They want to win this game badly. So I think West Virginia is the side to be on here, and I like the number as well.
Yeah, you're right. The total on that game, 54.5. Again, Oklahoma, 10.5-point favorite in Morgantown. Let's get to some of your best bets. We haven't talked Georgia, South Carolina. We haven't even talked G5 like Memphis Navy. We haven't talked LSU, A&M, K-State, Baylor, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, the first meeting there in the Egg Bowl for those two new head coaches. What are your best bets this week?
Yeah, let's start with that LSU, A&M game that you mentioned. So when you're looking at LSU, They are 3-3, I believe, in SEC play right now. The wins are over Arkansas, which is a pretty decent win. I mean, Arkansas is pretty good this year. So I think the win last week over Arkansas, probably the best win of the year. They beat South Carolina. They beat Vanderbilt. The last two, not really competitive, but who really cares? It's South Carolina and Vanderbilt. They lost to Mississippi State in the opening game where everybody was, you know, the wool began to be lifted from people's eyes. They've also lost to Missouri, and they got absolutely killed by Auburn, who, as you've pointed out, has not exactly been the best team in the SEC this year. So, given those records against those teams, why on earth are they going to College Station only getting 14 points? Texas A&M should drub LSU. It should not be close. So I am happy to lay the 14 because, I mean, and this is not a sentence you can say every day, I think there is value in only having to lay 14 points. This is all about the LSU brand. I feel like if you look at Texas A&M, you watch them play, you know how good they are, you know they have something to play for, and then you look at LSU and they look how just how absolutely mediocre to below average they've been on defense, how not great they were in the game, the only game where they actually played sort of a top 25, top 40 type of team this year. Give me the Aggies minus the 14. I don't have to think twice about that one. I've already bet it. So right now, as my card stands right now, that's I've already bet. Texas A&M is my biggest bet of the week so far. Iowa State going to Austin. This is the spot. I talk so much about Iowa State and where you want to bet them. This is the spot where you want to bet Iowa State. I don't want to lay double-digit points with Iowa State. I don't want to bet Iowa State as a favorite. But going to Austin, as I would say, and I know you would say, the better team in this matchup, they are 1.5-point underdogs as of right now. I think Iowa State's going to get bet all week. I think by the time this game kicks off, Iowa State will be a pick or will be a slight favorite. Get them now while they are not laying points, while they are still catching points. Iowa State, I think, will win this game. I feel really good about their chances. So bet the plus 1.5. Bet the money line if you're really feeling it. But I think Iowa State's the side to be on here. And so do the pros, because 41% of tickets are on Iowa State, meaning 59% of the tickets are on Texas. 41% of the tickets on Iowa State, but 74% of the money is on Iowa State. So that's a pretty big split. Bet the Cyclones. Tulsa plus 1 at Houston. This is another one that has a telling pro versus square split. Tulsa plus 1 at Houston, 46% of the tickets on Tulsa. 62% of the money is on Tulsa. I would be interested to see how that ticket count changes, as we talked about earlier, now that the top 25 is out and Tulsa's there at 25. I bet there is some public small bet money that comes in on Tulsa and that ticket count starts to change. How about UTEP at Rice? I like Rice. I said whatever I said last year about they're the greatest one-win team in the history of college football or something. They are favored here against UTEP. I believe this game is at Rice. They opened as an 8-point favorite. It has been bet up to an 11.5-point spread. I just feel like that's too many points. So this is a counterplay, but even at 8, I would have told you there was probably a little bit of value on UTEP. Look, neither one of these teams is all that great, but with a low total and you're catching 11.5, it just feels like UTEP is the side to be on. It's too many points. I'm getting some free points here, it feels like. So give me UTEP. Coastal at Texas State. I want to say that Coastal is like 6-2 against the spread this year. It's a good mark. They're obviously undefeated. This is a classic trap spot for Coastal Carolina. And I have lost bets already this year saying, hey, it's time to sell your stock on Coastal Carolina, and I have been wrong already. But when you look at this spot, last week they played App State. I was on Coastal. It was my biggest bet of the week after the SMU-Houston game got canceled. So Coastal became my biggest bet of the week against App. I was right. I cashed it. I'll probably bet on them again before it's all said and done. But they played App last week. Next week, is the game against Liberty, which is another highly anticipated game. There are rumors that College Game Day wants to go to Coastal Carolina next week. This is a classic, classic trap game. Texas State at home catching 17 points. I like Texas State plus the points. Not saying they win, not saying they beat Coastal, because frankly, in terms of which team is better, not really much of a contest here. But I could see Coastal coming slow out of the gate. I could see them limping to the finish line. I could see a backdoor cover. I could see Texas State definitely being the right side of this bet. We already talked about Northwestern at Michigan State. The line opens at 10.5. It goes to 13.5. I think if you wait till kickoff, you might be able to get it on the other side of 14. It just feels like this is too many points. And when you look at Northwestern's style of play, I would be very, very cautious about wanting to lay in the neighborhood of two touchdowns on the road with Northwestern. I said this a couple weeks ago about Indiana and got absolutely burned, so take it with a grain of salt, but I think I would be on Michigan State here. Rutgers plus 11.5 at Purdue. This is a little smelly to me because, I mean, it's almost like Rutgers had that great game against Michigan State where they turned them over like a billion times. And, you know, one is a 28-point underdog or whatever it was. And then everybody just forgot that Rutgers was kind of halfway decent this year. I get that they're 1-3 or whatever their record is. But Purdue, I don't think, has won a game by more than like 4 points so far. So for them to be laying 11.5 against Rutgers seems very odd to me. My initial assessment was to lean toward Rutgers. I think I'm actually going to stay away from this one just because the line is so odd that this kind of feels like one of those somebody knows something that you don't lines. And then finally, Nevada minus 7 at Hawaii. Nevada is perfect both in terms of win-loss record, but also against the spread. They have yet to fail to cover, and I think this is the third or fourth week in a row we've talked about betting against Hawaii and how that is long-term profitable. So I like Nevada in that spot as well, only having to lay a touchdown and really, really looking good in that Mountain West over there.
I've been sitting here for the, I don't know, whatever 10 minutes you talked, waiting for the Kent State love to come. It never came.
Nah, not this week.
Where's the love for Kent State? 7 points on the road at Buffalo.
Not happening. I just don't have a good feel for the MAC yet.
We'll be back on Monday. Episode drops right at 7 a.m. Eastern on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere else you do your podcasting. And then, per usual, back 1 week from now, the next Thursday, looking at week 14 lines in college football. And as always, reminder, if you have any questions for these episodes, specific games you want broken down, strategy stuff, hit up High Motor Pod on Twitter at High Motor Pod or Chase directly at Chase A Kitty. We'll get to those on next week's Thursday episode. Thanks for dropping by. Thanks for listening to the High Motor Podcast.
I saw a friend today. It had been a while. And we forgot each other's names. But it didn't matter because deep inside, the feeling still remained the same. We talked of knowing one before you met. How you feel more than you see, and other worlds that lie in spaces in between.